Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, 5 o'clock hours here. It's a Monday. Battleborne Broadcast Center. The show is brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyers, 766-1400. Offices in Reno and Vegas and Henderson in downtown Las Vegas. Adam Hill is here. Griffin is back on the board running the show. By the way, the number for Battleborne is 766-1400, 766-1400. We're about 20 minutes away from a conversation with Kevin Kruger, checking in on the Runnin' Rebels and what they've got in with the new team, summer workouts, and give us a preview of what the summer entails and maybe a little bit of the schedule. They haven't released a non-con yet, but everyone's curious to see what's going to happen. If I'm correct, they're expanding this year to a 20-game schedule in the Mountain West Conference, so we'll ask about that, about flexibility, if that's a good or bad thing when it comes to the men's basketball schedule. This weekend, you know, I will never get – this is going to go back an hour one. You were saying you were mocking on a friend who said he doesn't know what channel anything is on anymore. Like for sports.
Right.
You guys all yelled at him, like, just talk to your remote and it'll pop it up. And what does it matter?
So what you want to watch?
I don't understand Instagram with the feed and the stories. Like, why do you want stories that go away? Do they go away?
Yeah.
Don't you want your memories of your sports memories being there forever?
Well, you can keep a log. You can save you can save anything you post to your story into your gallery.
They go to the feed? I'll go to a gallery.
No, they go to your gallery, so you can have them repost them later if you want.
I went to your IG because you had I had asked about Sexy Red and wrestling being in town, and you said you saved it for IG, and then I looked, and I'm like, oh, it's not on his feed. I wonder, oh, that's right. There's that stories thing.
Yeah, that stories I hit thing.
The picture. I know I sound old.
It's kind of a thing.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
I guess it. I have so few posts that I don't want to waste them just on stories. Okay. So what is NXT? And it was at the Apex?
Yeah, it's kind of like the WWE's Development League. Okay.
What can you tell people? I think we speak about the Apex in town as like this known thing. What is it?
It's a facility the UFC built across the street from their headquarters down. I'm sure many people pass it. Well, if 215 is open. If you can't get on it right now, but I'm sure many people pass it as you're driving on 215 West between Jones and Rainbow.
Do you want to do a shout out to everybody? My people, I got caught in it 3 hours ago. I feel bad for you. Warn people what's going on. We probably should have been doing that like every half an hour.
So apparently for this week, you can't get from 15 North to 215 West.
Okay.
Kind of an important, interchange.
That's already a nightmare as it is.
Yeah.
And now it's closed because it backs up a lot. Yeah. But now it's just closed. It was closed today.
It's closed for the rest of the week, I guess. Maybe Thursday it'll reopen. That's fun. Usually if you're driving on that road, you could see it. The giant UFC headquarters on one corner, and then on the other corner is a smaller UFC building. It's basically a production facility. They can produce any of their events from around the world, like out of a studio there at the Apex, but it's also got a massive, space where they can put on events. They used it a lot. Obviously the plan was to use it for the Ultimate Fighter and for Dana White's Contender Series when they first opened it. Then with the pandemic, it became actually like a perfect place for them to do events where they could have a closed building, control who got in and out in terms of, testing everybody that came in and be able to run events in a setting with no fans, with a great TV production facility throughout the pandemic. And now they're using it for other things. So last week there was a Street League skateboarding event in there. They set up like a ramp and a rail for the skaters to skate on. That was a pretty cool like changeover that they did. They did the XFL draft there as well a while ago. They just do other different events, and most of them tend to be in the family, right? So now TKO has WWE, they have UFC. They've also got Throw One, kind of, which is where Street League Skateboarding came in. So they've got all these different properties under their umbrella, and they're using it for a lot of different things. And yesterday there was a wrestling ring set up there, a match for the NXT pay-per-view card that was in there, and they were able to get, I believe, a little over 700 fans into the venue.
Not to go negative right off the bat, but I saw some of the wrestlers from NXT said they didn't like the space because it doesn't have the normal room around the ring. And were they talking about for performing or something? What are they talking about? Because I'm looking at your picture. What's this lady's name? There's a Lola Vice.
Lola Vice.
And then I see pictures, your picture. Is that the ring? I see a canvas, but I see nothing around.
Yeah, that was a
take down the ropes.
What yeah, that was for on? A that was for an NXT Underground fight.
What does that mean?
Which is her specialty. She's now 2-0 in the Underground.
Oh, you really know?
Which is I follow her. She's an MMA fighter.
Oh, okay.
So she crossed over to wrestling. So
what's
she's there
an Underground
now.
Fight mean?
They took the ropes out. It can only be knockout or submission. Basically, Fight Club essentially is what it is. And they have like 20 people around the ring, kind of like cheering like people on and like pushing them back in
like
the ring to fight.
Match. Sure, kind of, yeah. But you also may take a beating when you went to the floor.
Sure. And the people on the outside got kind of caught up in it. They were, you know, people were throwing on them. It was good. It was exciting. I will say, as much of a fan as I am of Valerie, Lola, yeah. It's tough to do a real fight staged.
No, it's a real fight.
It's tough to do a staged real fight.
You're saying for her.
For
the performers.
For the performers. To make it look somewhat real, it's almost impossible. That's why they have the people on the outside like chanting and like it adds atmosphere to it because it would look very look very, very movie like.
Okay.
Otherwise.
And then I see ropes where Sexy Red is.
Yeah, they took the ropes down for that match and then put them back up for the main fights.
So did Sexy Red fight?
She didn't.
Who is Sexy Red, by the way, to explain that to the audience?
She's a rapper. Very talented.
She's very talented?
Very talented.
Is she?
Yeah. And she was the host of the NXT event.
Okay.
So she got introduced at the beginning, spoke, and then actually participated in an interview with Lola. And then at the end, when Trick Williams won the main event, she came in and partied with him.
Who?
Trick Williams.
Okay, who is he?
He's a wrestler of some sort.
Okay, you don't seem as interested in that one.
I don't know much about wrestling. I know Valerie fought Shayna Baszler. It was a two MMA fighters fighting each other.
Oh,
that was kind of the my
Shayna Baszler.
Yeah.
Wait, okay.
Yeah.
The Four Horsewomen.
Sure.
Okay.
That was that match. It was two MMA people, so I knew them. Okay. And there was a lot of UFC people around. I was sitting next to like Brandon Moreno, Forrest Griffin, Jamal Hill was there. Like that was kind of the area that I was sitting in. So there's a lot of UFC involvement. A lot of UFC execs were there too, kind of checking it out, seeing what's going on.
What's going to happen to the Apex?
Nothing.
It sounds like they need more space.
No, well, I think the issue was fans, right? So the NXT has a lot of events with no fans.
Oh, really?
I think they do have the Performance Center in Orlando, which was their version of the Apex. I think the issue for this one was there wasn't a lot of, you know, when somebody's thrown out of the ring and they kind of wrestle on the floor, there wasn't a whole lot of space because they tried to get as many fans as they could in there.
Right.
And to put 700 fans in there, which when I heard they were doing 700, I was like, wow, how are they going to pull that off? And they actually did. It was a very cool experience for fans of wrestling that were there that were able to get like right up on the action. But it's tough to jam that many seats into that small of an area. I think that was probably their issue.
This may be a really stupid question. Years ago, you had told us they were planning on building a hotel.
Yeah, I think they still are.
Okay. So they have a lot of room over there to work
outside,
with.
Sure.
Nice. And you feel like it's going swimmingly, the TKO thing?
Seems to be. I mean, they've got a lot of...
I wonder if it's a good thing that Vince is gone.
I'm sure it is.
Yes.
With Las Vegas and Nick Khan running things for the WWE.
Okay. All right. So that's what you watched this weekend.
Sure. That's okay. one of the things awesome. I watched.
You ever go down a rabbit hole on your favorite site there?
Also, Lola did repost my story, so that was very exciting too.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Valerie.
Good to have friends in high places.
Exactly.
You ever go down a rabbit hole and then the next day you're like, why was I watching that on YouTube?
Yeah, because I watch YouTube all the time. Yes. So yes.
So I took your lead, and I do this every once in a while. I somehow stumbled on the 1989 Academy Awards.
Okay.
And they had a number at one point where they were like, "Hey, these are the stars of the future. They're going to be winning Oscars down the road." And then they made all these people, like teens and 20 somethings, do an 11-minute Broadway performance. But it was funny watching it because. Like some of the actors you see and actresses, they come out and you're like, oh, I know who that is. Now, I don't think a single person in the group won an Oscar since. And it was, what is that, 35 years ago?
Sure.
But they were making him sing. It was like Ricky Lake was in it. Patrick Dempsey, Blair Underwood, Holly Robinson. Those are all names you know, right?
Sure.
Okay. And then as we went along, I keep seeing this one lady and she's thin, tall. She's got like a bikini top on with a jacket. And then they finally show her name. And it's, this is the future stars, like Oscar winners. It's Melora Hardin. Do you know that name?
Wait, I do.
Yes, you do.
Oh, yeah, from The Office.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Jan.
She's Jan.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. She was going to win an Oscar 35 years ago.
She could have. She should have gotten an Emmy.
She played a great character.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that she expected that to be like the height of her. I think she did some big things to get to be involved in that mix back then.
Well, I think being a main character on The Office is the dream for anybody. That's
pretty good.
That's bigger than an Oscar to me.
I don't know about that, but you.
There's a lot of people with Oscars.
You're not objective.
Like, who cares?
You love The Office.
Like, who cares?
You love The Office. So the other thing I was watching was more of Dynasty on Apple TV, and they did basically a whole episode on Adrian Hernandez. Got that name right? Wait, why am I saying the wrong name?
Aaron Hernandez?
Aaron Hernandez. I don't know why I said Adrian. We've got an Adrian local. Aaron Hernandez. Woo. Have you watched that one?
No.
You got to watch this.
It's the only one I want to watch, actually, so.
It's pretty chilling. Like, guys are still afraid to talk. Wes Welker is, he's like, basically there's a couple of dudes who are like, we could see there was something wrong. Like, almost like, I don't know why we allowed this guy to stay around for as long as he
caught
did.
A lot of passes. It's tough to cover.
I'll just tell you this. They didn't make Belichick look very good. Like, Belichick just looked the other way when Aaron Hernandez was being a lunatic around his football team.
Let's talk about football. Let's talk about football.
That's what it was.
He's a good player.
That's what it was. So this weekend, we got a story about Belichick from one Damian Harris.
Yeah.
Now, what did he say? Because this wasn't a comment. Obviously, Harris is more of the recent era when things really went south.
Yeah. So he was kind of asked about Mac Jones and flaming out and not, you know, living up to the potential he showed as a rookie. And he is putting it squarely on the shoulders of Bill Belichick, kind of. He said, look, Mac Jones was a rookie. Looked like he was going to be a future star. Played very, very well with Josh McDaniels, a real offensive coordinator. And then Josh McDaniels left, and he decided to hire a defensive coordinator and a special teams coach to be co-offensive coordinators and completely stunted the development of Mac Jones. Now, he didn't completely absolve Mac Jones. He said he has to, do the work and put the time in and everything else. But he said, basically, like, you've got this guy that you think is going to be very good and shows a lot of potential. And then all of a sudden you stop providing him the right support. And you just decide a different defensive coach can do it. And Damian Harris has basically kind of put it on ego to the point of, who cares who's the coach? Just tell him to do what I'm telling you to tell him to do. Doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
And it clearly didn't.
You believe this, right?
Yeah. We talked about it at the time.
Yep.
It was a ridiculous decision. And it was, I thought at the time, and I think you did too, that was very ego-driven of, who cares who the coaches are? I'm the coach. I coach the team.
Which is why I'm surprised that so many people were blown away that most of the NFL's like, no thanks, Bill. Do you think this year away, and he's going to get some adulation working in the media, because if he is... Have they officially announced a regular involvement?
Yeah, I think he's doing Mondays.
Right. Is he doing the Manning show?
I thought he wasn't. I think he's definitely doing McAfee.
He's doing McAfee.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Mike Davis. I don't know if you've met Mike from over at Fox 5. And I didn't. We were doing the Big Four last week, and he was in with Salerno. There was a lot of voices. And he said something on the air about Belichick has, like, reinvented himself, and he's won over a lot of people with some of his appearances. And I was like, I don't think that was that widespread that the masses know that he came off okay with McAfee. Do you think this year on TV, he'll be able to kind of reinvent himself in terms of his reputation, where people will be salivating around the NFL? At least four or five teams will be like, we got to get him.
I don't know if four or five. I think there might be one or two, but we'll see how he feels too, right? He might just go to media and be like, this is good.
This is great.
I'm paid.
Right?
I'm doing nothing. I'm good. I'm an old man.
Do you think he's going to do
that? Probably getting a lot of A lot of groupies.
Do you think he's going to do that?
Maybe.
He's going to get a lot of groupies. Yes.
You never know.
He'll be leaving a lot of houses shirtless.
More time for groupies when you're
on TV. A lot of ring cameras catching Belichick. He'll be on the road.
Very possible.
Going, well, I mean, hey, how do you, I can't do, I'm not going to do a Belichick. I don't want to do the mumbly voice. But he could call up a fellow coaching mate and be like, how do you do it on the road? Like, how do you master that, Urban? Because I feel like that was Herb's thing.
Well, Urban was more creepy, I feel, about it. Bill just got the job done.
I think Herb was creepy because he got caught.
No, it was creepy watching like the little video clip, too, of just like how he was approaching it. Bill, we just saw, you know, walking out in the morning to like get the paper.
Come on, shirtless.
Yeah.
70-year-old Bill Belichick.
I don't think Urban ever got there.
So what one or two teams? They have to be winning teams, right? I mean, could it be that I thought the two most likely teams that could have moved on someone this year, but I guess they thought it was early. Hey, let's give them one more year. Were the Eagles and the Bills?
Yeah.
Could Belichick work with the Eagles, and would Philly be willing? They have a very strong GM who's a personality as well. Or is Buffalo the spot?
Buffalo seemed more likely. But I don't know. I don't know how it would work out. I don't know if he wants to, I mean, I'm sure he wouldn't mind being in the division, trying to go beat them. But who knows? Maybe he wants to go somewhere warm. It's like retirement time now.
I feel at 80, I'll go 85% sure that he's going to want to coach football after a year. That he's not going to like it that much being a TV talking head.
It's possible. But does he want, I mean, is he like, let's go to someplace to retire. Let's go to Florida. Or is he going to have a limited list? They say like, you know what? I want to coach in certain places. And that's it. That's possible.
Football news out of New York and very much Vegas related. So Darren Waller made it official.
He did. 17.5-minute video breaking down the reasons why he's retiring and moving on. He did say, I'm sure a lot of people are going to think I'm crazy. Just walking away from more than $30 million. And not only walking away from $30 million, he has to pay back bonuses. So he's gonna,
oh, really?
He's gonna return some money, and he talked about that in the video. He said, "You know, for my entire life, people have looked at me from the outside and said, man, he has it all.' And I felt on the inside like I'm losing it. I hate this. Like, what is going on? And now, everybody on the outside is looking at me saying, like, that guy's crazy. He's making these weird videos. He's trying to do music. He's walking away from $30 million. And I, on my inside, I'm like, I've got it all now. I'm good. I'm happy." So he said it's just very ironic how perceptions can be. But he wants to pursue music. He wants to, you know, follow that. He said he's much more happy doing that, and it's better for his life and better for his sobriety and his recovery. He also did tell a story, which I didn't think was out. I hadn't heard it for sure, that he was rushed to the hospital last year, was basically almost dead.
Wait, you knew this?
No, I said I hadn't heard it.
Well, I thought you suggested like that you'd heard it and it wasn't out.
No, I'm saying I don't think it was out. That
he got very sick.
He got very sick, was rushed to the hospital. He thought he was going to die, and you know they thought he was going to die. And he just said, you know, am I happy with where I am? Am I happy with what I've accomplished, what I've done? He's like, I could die any day, and I need to be satisfied with what I've accomplished in my life or what I'm doing in my life when I die. And he's not there, so he's going to try to pursue that.
You like Darren Waller?
I do. I don't think he makes the best videos, but he tries.
Music videos.
Yeah.
His 17-minute video was okay?
It was long, but you also, look, it's retirement. You can do what you want. Speak how much ever you want to.
Oh, I hope if he wasn't happy, I hope he's happier. I think he's a guy who can help a lot of people telling his story. So I hope he finds success. I'd love to. I'm sure he's going, because he's been he's not going to say a motivational speaker.
Kind of.
Do you think okay. Do you think that's something he's going to want to do?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I think he's talked about how that helps him. He also does a lot of things that aren't publicized. I know he did allow the real sports cameras to follow him, but I know he spends a lot of time here because he still does live in Vegas. And he spends a lot of time in the underground, the tunnels where a lot of people live.
He still does it?
All the time, yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. He's about like helping people. And he said helping people is what keeps him sober and like seeing like, okay, well, this is where I could be. Let's, you know, make sure I stay sober.
On the way back, let's talk a little NBA. More on the finals. Is the series over or just beginning now. Now the Celtics, to close this thing out up 2-0, have got to win some games, or at least one game, in Dallas. And we'll get to what looked like a major, major change in college basketball. But Dan Hurley told the Lakers, no thanks.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So breaking news in the afternoon, Adam Hill. And that was Dan Hurley decided to pass on a Lakers offer. We don't know exactly what the offer was. Reported as 6 years and $70 million. That's a big decision.
Yeah.
To go from a place you've established things, you're really rolling right now at UConn, and the jump to the NBA. There are different challenges in the NBA versus
college. Definitely are, especially when you're rolling at the level that you are right now, where you have everything operating smoothly from not only on the court, but I'm sure you have everybody you want behind the scenes working in the same direction that you want them. And you don't have to, you know, redo all of that kind of stuff if you move to another place.
We love talking basketball with this guy. Of course, we're going to talk about his team, the Run Rebels, and Coach Kevin Kruger's on the horn with Steve Cofield and Adam Hill. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. You have any time for some vacay the last few months, or was the portal so intense you couldn't even take a break for a couple of days?
Well, I mean, a little bit of both. You know, it's, you kind of expect not to have much of a break with the way that the NCAA has formed the calendar. But we were able to get our roster done because of the good retention and then also some early commitment. So we've had a couple of weeks where things have just been a little bit slower.
You mentioned retention with DJ Thomas. Did you feel very comfortable early in April, or really was it? I mean, you can talk to each other and then the family and have basically something worked out. But did you guys have to sweat it out until the very end of April?
Well, no, because you know we've always had an open line of communication and a great, I think, relationship with the staff and their family. And the thing that, you know, DJ's been asked about a handful of times, and rightfully so, you know, with the attention he got this year and the year that he had. But, you know, he never even went into the portal.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like that's the thing that nobody – I mean, all of the rumors, all of the, you know, he got offered this, he got offered that. He may have. I mean, we're not pretending that tampering never happens in college basketball, but he never went in the portal. And – so, of course, there was always anxiety about everybody on our roster that, you know, you don't ever want to be surprised. But in today's day and age, I think you've just got to be ready for the conversation at the end of the year to go either direction with wanting to come back and stay or wanting to explore options in the portal.
He played at such a high level last year, obviously, as a freshman. What is the next step? What is the next, you know, step in his development? And what has he kind of communicated to you in terms of what he wants to get done?
I think it's just growing again, you know, just seeing the next step. You know, if once you start to worry about, you know, drafted first round, All-American versus, you know, maybe not being an All-American. I mean, when you start to have those bigger picture goals that you kind of more typically get at the end of the season or at the end of a career, I think that's where guys can get in a little bit of trouble. And that's where I think the sophomore slump happens in a lot of cases, or maybe sophomore to junior year or whatever year it may be. But that's where I think his circle is just such a strength for him as a player. When you talk about his mom and his dad, and, you know, just seeing the next step forward, just take the next step in front of you and the rest will happen. And I think, you know, that's what he does and that's what he's really good at. And that's why he's going to have another good year.
I don't think we publicize it too much, and publicize is not the right word, but report on it a whole lot during the season. And we're talking to Kevin Kruger about DJ and the injuries that he dealt with. No, he had an ankle. I don't even know if it was the same ankle that he turned down in Florida, but I know he had to manage an ankle. You can answer that one. And then he also had to manage a wrist from the preseason. I think the wrist was it fixed, or was there some procedure done on the wrist this offseason?
Yeah. Just a little thumb wrist issue. And yeah, he took his bumps and his bruises. There's no question about that. I mean, he played, through and played really well and managed as best as he could. But he definitely, you know, paid the price for being a smaller guard.
Yes. The funny thing is, I guess I can draw a parallel here. I don't know how much you've been paying attention to women's basketball and Caitlin Clark making the rounds and, you know, people kind of sending a message, beating her up a little bit. But, I mean, it was clear, at least in Mountain West Conference play, when you play teams twice, that part of the game plan was to get really physical with them. And I know you had talked, you know, on the air and even off about, hey, there's something to being a point guard and skill and dealing with physicality and making sure you're drawing fouls. And that's probably one of the things that's in his learning experience between seasons, right?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, just the number of things I think where we're going to see maybe not even be a noticeable difference as much or something that shows up in the stat sheet is just the experience factor. To your point exactly, you know, drawing that foul in the backcourt, you know, where you make that physicality very noticeable to the refs early on. And they're not going to call all of them, as we learned, you know, with him anyway. But, you know, if you can kind of get their attention to, hey, he's bumping and holding in the backcourt and I'll compete through it, but you got to protect me a little bit. And, you know, that's something I think just as time goes on, you just kind of learn how to do that without, of course, showing up the official. But at the same time, you kind of make the contact a little more obvious. And, you know, you get a call in the backcourt, then that kind of changes things a little bit. You know, they can't press you as hard the next time. It might draw an early foul on somebody important on the other team in terms of their defensive ability. And I think the little things like that, that's just kind of the one that is kind of probably the most noticeable and the most asked about in terms of his, you know, going from year one to year two. But little things like that, I think, aside from drawing fouls, just again, just knowing what works, what doesn't, where he can really excel and where he can continue to grow is a lot of things that may not show up in the stat sheet, but they're going to make a big difference for us next year.
So I often guess with you, and we'll see what my guess, how it's greeted here on the transfer portal this year. When I look around the country, I see programs go out and kind of scoop up, whether it's, you know, lateral level players or, you know, big name players and a team is thrown together. I'm not saying every coach has no plan, but I think sometimes, like, I look and I'm like, wait, that doesn't fit. I don't know if they got enough guards or they don't, you know, enough bigs, or maybe they're not going to be good enough defensively. I think this was a year in the offseason where you had a plan, and it didn't necessarily mean going out and trying to scoop up former four stars who were playing at power fives, that you wanted a team to fit this time around.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. Of course, you're always the experience and age. I think what the NCAA has done with the unlimited transfer is definitely made it hard on freshmen. They've made it an uphill battle. But at the same time, I think this is a roster that is going to have a great cohesiveness. There's a great blend of skill sets and experience levels. I think we can have a number of you know, older brothers to younger brothers type situations in the locker room and on the court, and I really think that the staff just did a great job of we had targets and we did our best to do as much research as we could in such a short amount of time, but we were really excited when all those guys got off the plane and came onto campus.
Yeah, I saw the video the other day of you greeting guys and especially some of the big guys. That was kind of cool to see. And we'll get to some of the young big guys who are coming in. But a couple of the pieces you brought in, let's go real hardcore here with the roster build with Kevin Kruger and UNLV basketball. I don't think a lot of people watched Jace Whiting with Boise State. He got a lot of time a couple of years ago. He didn't get as much time last year. Why did you guys kind of pinpoint him as a guy who could come in and be in the mix as a backup point guard, maybe play the two? What'd you like about him?
His steady hand, another ball handler, another decision maker, facilitator, shot maker, experience, a guy that, you know, during the recruiting discussion, you know, knowing the roster, knowing who was coming back, was excited about the opportunity to blend with those guys. It was really just, it was a great kind of start to the portal season for us. The guy that shoots the free throws at a high level. Like you said, you know, he shot 50% last year on threes. He didn't take, you know, a million of them, but he takes smart shots, takes care of the ball. knows how to play amongst other guards, did a good job at Boise State of that. So we were really excited to add Jace.
Well, and he's coming from a culture that plays, you know, physical and insist on defense. So that's good. How often do you look at guys and you're like, well, I don't know if the defense is up to snuff. We'll get that person to play defense. Are you sort of really picky now where you're like, hey, either they come from a place that has a defensive mindset and he's shown that possibility of doing so. Like, how do you select players? Are you kind of like, hey, he's already got to have the defense as a mindset?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think like all players, you know, you've got to watch the film and you got to pick what they excel at and how you want to blend that into the group. And, but yeah, I mean, we've tried for 3 years and had, good defensive teams, especially toward the end of last year, that group was really gelling defensively and offensively and continued to get better. But, yeah, I mean, this is a group that we're going to hammer team defense. There's a lot of experience out there. There's guys that have played in major conferences, but also had, big time roles and expectations. So, we are definitely a team defense, mindset, but, because you know, if you got enough of them out there with a good mindset, good intent, and a good effort level, then you can do a lot of good things defensively.
Kevin Kruger's with us on Cofield and Company. What'd you like about Jaden Henley? You know, 6'7" kid who played at DePaul and Minnesota, and Southern California guy, right?
Yeah, he's a Southern California kid that came up through an AAU program with a guy we know very well. We've had a lot of history with not only UNLV but guys on staff. A high level of trust there. And, again, SoCal kid, we got to see him a bunch in high school. Played against him, actually, when he was at Minnesota, when we were in the SoCal Challenge down in the San Diego area. But a good basketball player. Just can handle the ball, can shoot the ball. Extremely young, actually still 19. And, you know, I saw him when he got off the plane. My first question was like, have you grown since we saw you in April? You know, he's still got a lot of potential to tap into just in his physical maturity. But like you said, you know, the Big East experience, Big Ten experience, coming back closer to home. So we're excited about Jaden.
Another one, I'm wondering what the connect was on Jalen Bedford, who has some numbers to, you know, back up his resume, has been a scorer in the past. What was the connect on him?
Yeah, Jalen Bedford coming from Oral Roberts. Another one of the J's, if you'll notice. We have almost everybody has a J in their name at some point. But, a scorer's first mentality. Somebody who can score at all three levels, but really aggressive getting to the rim, really good athlete, a good 2-3 inches taller than he looks on film. He's got great length. And he's a proven scorer, you know, at over 15 a night. He knows how to be aggressive and how to, he just has that mindset from the jump to go out and get shot attempts and get some points going, get momentum going. And I thought, that was something that could be really good for this group, is somebody who's got a history of scoring.
Kevin Kruger's with us. Basketball tickets up at UNLVtickets.com is the schedule. When do you think you're going to be able to release the schedule?
We're hoping for soon. It's actually done. We're just waiting on legal to fill it out or to make sure that nobody did anything wrong on either side. And then we're hoping to release it soon because we got some really exciting games and we got some really good games early that I think the community will get out and want to see before conference starts.
What goes into building the schedule? I mean, obviously you have to have teams with open dates, that sort of thing. But you know, what kind of games are you looking for in terms of, are you building it to the roster that you have? Does that matter in the process? And what are the most important factors in scheduling some of those games?
Oh gosh, well, just to be bluntly honest, calendar. You know, you want to, of course, play the best and most challenging schedule that you can. You want to play in events and in areas that would provide great games, great experience, of course, before, as you guys are kind of molding as a team and as a roster. But honestly, the thing that actually becomes more of an issue more times than not, I should say, is the calendar. You know, if you want to play on a Wednesday and they can only play on a Thursday and it's got to be on the road, but then you have a Saturday early afternoon game, you know, those kind of decisions affect a lot more, I think, than people recognize. Obviously, you want to play every game at home on Saturday if you can, but you know, that doesn't always work out either. So, and a lot of things are done. You know, with the Big Ten, with the SEC, Big 12. You know, with going to 20 games, that's the domino effect that's had. I think has made it. People are waiting a lot longer for schedules to round out their schedules, and they're making sure from a travel standpoint that you give your guys an opportunity to recover, but also an opportunity to go if it's a road game and win a game. And I'd love for you guys to sit in with us on a scheduling meeting at some point, and just so you can see, not for anything other than just all the variables that go into it, other than just you know, calling up and saying, "Do you want to play?" And they're like, "Sure." And then it's not that simple.
The crazy, there's easy. There's almost nothing I would like to do more in the world. I'm so nerdy about that stuff. I would love to do that.
Oh well, and it's fascinating because you do. At the Mountain West level, obviously, we've sent 6-4 in the past couple of years. But you want to play games that, you know, of course, you want to play for the fan base, a recognizable name, for the committee and for the country and for the ADs. You want to play a team that's well-respected and going to have a good year. You've got to do a little bit of guesswork there. You got to assume who they're going to get in the portal, who they're not. All those things kind of factor in. And then when you do that at the end of the day, you don't necessarily have a lot of options or, you know, as we say a lot, you know, something's got to give. So it might be travel or it might be date or time of the game or, you know, all that factors into one. And so making a schedule is not the most fun part of our job.
Last couple of minutes here with Kevin Kruger, head coach of UNLV, Runner Rebels basketball. It's Adam Hill, Steve Cofield. I don't want to overstep here, but I'm going to throw it out there to talk about the positives of being a college basketball coach. I just wonder what went into Dan Hurley's decision to pass on the Lakers, go back to UConn, because we hear so much, coach, about how college basketball is just terrible now. It's transactional, the portal, you know, there are a lot of positives. There are a lot of reasons. And I mean, certainly you have experience with this, with your father coaching in the NBA and in college. There are still a lot of positives to being an educator and coaching college basketball.
Well, yeah. I mean, I growing up, of course, he was in college until we moved to Atlanta, going into my junior year of high school. But, you know, that like we had our first team workout today. And I just, you know, thinking of it like to your point, you know, we don't talk about the positives enough, or they're just, of course, they're not sexy. So you don't, you're not going to put them on the front page. But like, that's where, I think if you went across the country, that hour that we had with those guys today, it flew by. I mean, it's so much fun to get out there, talk strategy, see what works, see what they like, you know, have those conversations, figure out how to problem solve, you know, challenge the guys to get better. You know, I mean, that part of it, I think the positives and the fun part that come with that. And those carry on to season, of course, too. I think will always, for me personally, at least outweigh the negatives, which, you know, of course, are the some of the negatives that we see and hear about throughout the year.
Yeah. I get so worked up on social media. I don't respond to most of it because I know it's just people trolling. But I saw something last week where someone's like, college football and men's college basketball is just, it's ruined. There's nothing, you know, on the scholar athlete front anywhere. And I'm like, that is ridiculous. If you're around college basketball teams and college football teams, and there you see the educational aspect of it, not just teaching basketball, the ability for people to get degrees is something really, really special. The college experience is something really, really special.
Well, unfortunately, we is right now as a country, not to be that guy, but we've kind of almost turn this narrative that not only a college degree, but the college experience is worthless and it's meaningless. And, you know, degree aside, the college experience and the maturing and the opportunities you get to learn with a sort of a built-in safety net that college can provide, I think it's so undervalued. And, of course, the degree is a great part. You learn how to, you know, be a part of a hierarchy, and you learn how to problem solve and time manage and do all of that. So it's not just the degree. You learn so many things. You learn how to network. You learn how to socialize. You learn how to figure things out. And, And yeah, and I think I know the point you're talking about, even with I think it was Greeny brought up that if Hurley goes, that college basketball is officially dead.
And oh it's just come like on.
I don't agree with him at all. Yeah, I mean, it is the Lakers' job we're talking about here.
Right, exactly.
It's the Lakers' job. I mean, it's the possibility of coaching LeBron James. I mean, there's a lot of, I felt a lot of more factors than just, you know, writing off the college game for to coach the Lakers. But yeah, I think that all those things are being undervalued. And to your point, I think there's a lot of still great things that college athletics, college basketball, college football provide.
Coach, we appreciate a couple minutes. Hopefully, if you're around during the summer league over at the Thomas and Mack, we can get you on in about a month or so. But we appreciate the time today.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'll be here. Let me know.
There he is. Thanks. Kevin Kruger.
I'm glad Dan Hurley staying in college so the sport is safe.
He really – I mean, listen, we probably should do more of this, do more of the hot take, hot shot stuff. But, the you know, one of the best college basketball coaches leaving for the Lakers is not going to crumble the sport.
It's over.
So stupid.
It's official.
It's so stupid. And yeah, I really mean on the whole, I know all the headlines go around how transactional it is and the high prices of kids asking for money. And, you know, the biggest of the big boys have a different budget than schools like UNLV and other Mountain West Conference schools. But I really mean it on the, when you cover college sports, you see all aspects of it. And I don't know, I was going to say, when you live life and you see the importance of, maybe not even the college education, but it's the connections, right?
Yeah.
How big are connections in life? And these are connections that, like, some kids are playing college football and basketball, but they would never have a chance to meet some of the people they're going to meet.
Yeah, of course.
Set up their future.
And there's still plenty of fans, plenty of people watching, all of those things. So relax.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Too early for college basketball for you? What else going on?
Never too early, but yeah, it's early.
Well, we said a couple weeks ago we were seeing some of the initial numbers come out for college football. And you're like, do you know how much research you have to do? Like the smartest gamblers who have money down on a lot of games, you know, games of the year, week zero and week one, God bless you. Because the other thing, it's such a guessing game. We talked about it last week. CBS Sports had a story that came out about most important transfer portal additions for each team in the Big Ten. And 9 of the 18 teams, it was a quarterback. Like, they don't know. Like, they think that someone's been brought in to solve or, you know, be the next guy at their school. But without knowing who the quarterback is, how the hell do you gamble on stuff? Mountain West is going to be wild. We had that story last week, too.
Well, that's kind of what you're doing. You're gambling on who the quarterback is going to be in some cases. And, yeah, I think this guy's going to win out, so I'm going to bet this team because if the other guy wins, then maybe the line is different.
Could that be advantage player if you're really well-sourced?
Yeah, if you figure it out. If you have some insight on something. And, look, that doesn't mean you're going to win either. Like, that's the part that a lot of people fall into sometimes. Like, you said it. Like, no, it's just – you're just trying to find the best number. If you know what you're doing in terms of a betting standpoint – if you bet a number now and the number is better when the game starts, you've already won. You just have to know how to do that, how to manage it, how to figure that out.
Can you get in the bag, please?
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Thank you. Last minute or so here. Colin Cowherd. Young USMNT fans are so predictable, it hurts. Team lost a friendly in preparation for Copa. The Stampede to fire Greg Berhalter is underway.
Well, for some people, it started already. It had already started. I actually was sitting with some people watching the Champions League final last week, and there was just a heated discussion about not should they fire Berhalter. It was like, should they do it today or tomorrow? Like, okay, I mean, all right. Like, that's crazy. The score didn't help. But by the way, if you watch the game, the score wasn't really the score. It was a 2-1 game. U.S. just sent everyone forward to try to score. And they gave up three that they shouldn't have given up, but they just kept trying to go forward because they were trying to score goals because it's a friendly. And they didn't care.
What should people expect in Copa from Team USA? Like, what sort of performance?
Top four.
Top four?
Yep. Semifinals.
Who's the favorite?
It is Argentina. But they should be top four. And if they win their group, which they probably should, they're the best team in the group, I believe their quarterfinal match will be at Allegiant. So,
and you're back now in terms of intensity and love of Team USA?
No, not quite.
You're never going to get it back?
I might at some point.
You fell off for some reason during a certain period.
In 2016, I just lost it.
You just fell apart.
Couldn't cheer for the U.S. anymore.
Thanks to Battleborn Injury Lawyers for housing the show. We'll see you.